Our goal is to facilitate lead generation across the board. And whether or not that's a front-end intensive activity or a zero front-end activity where it's just a link in an email.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
G'day, James Schramko here. Welcome back to Super Fast Business. I hope you like the new site. We've even adjusted the font on the site to make it easier to read. Please let me know what you think about it. Now, I'm here with a special guest, Clay Collins, who has been on this show more than any other guest. Welcome, Clay.
James, it's great to be here. What is this, number five, number four?
Listen, probably a listener would know. It might be five or six or seven. The reason you keep coming back is you just keep moving so damn fast. Like, this lead pages machine of yours seems every single week I'm getting a new email with a new feature. What is going on over there?
You know, I think that when we first started out in this business, we realized that there were so many applications that would just release a feature once, and then maybe every 2 years, they'd launch a version 2.0. And we set out from day one to create a software company that was engineered from the ground up and architected to create a release every single week. And our version of leadership is not, you know, blowing people away with fancy marketing per se, or having a bunch of takeaways, or this bonus is going away, or, you know, there's this discount buy now. We wanted to lead the market with true, like, feature leadership. And so it's been our agenda to come out with huge market-changing releases at least every quarter. So in 2013, we came out with lead pages, but in December of 2013, we came out with lead boxes. And then in January of 2014, we came out with lead links. Today, we came out with a new form of Facebook integration. And our goal in 2014 is to actually even accelerate even more the rate at which we release sort of game-changing innovation. So we want to speed up, not slow down.
Right. So is weekly releases the metric, or is it just popping stuff out as soon as you discover it?
Yeah, I think that when we first started, it was about weekly releases. But over time, as we've grown, we're now up to 35 people and around 15,000 customers. And we've had to be a little bit more deliberate. So it used to be that we only found out that a feature was ready when a developer told us the day it was launching. And now we have, like, quarter one release schedules. We know when things are going to come out. They're spec'd out in advance. And we kind of had to grow up and become a real company. So there is a lot more planning that goes into it now. So I can no longer play naive about the product roadmap when people ask me when things are coming out.
Right. So you must have, I mean, I know we talked about this before, the massive change in mindset going from the founder and having a couple of products to being, you're on a machine now. You are strapped to a rocket ship and you're on that ride. A couple of side points that I think is worth pointing out here. One is, what does it mean for you as the founder now in your day-to-day stuff? You mentioned to me earlier, because I got interviewed for a podcast you're running by a new guy that you've got on board, Tim, who was fantastic. It seems you're building a team around you to do a lot of the things that you might have been doing before.
Yeah, I think that as we scale, one of the things I think we're running up against is vision bandwidth. So I know that I want us to have an amazing podcast, but I don't necessarily have a vision for it. I know that we want to have amazing customer support, but I don't necessarily have a vision for that. I know that we need an amazing YouTube channel. We need amazing video production. There's a whole lot of things we need that I don't necessarily have a whole lot of strategic vision around, but I know that they need to be awesome. And so we've kind of moved from a company that just scaled my thinking to a company that is really led by a group of thought leaders that are connected among their peers in their own circles and pushing the envelope in what they do. One realization I had recently is that as the CEO of the company, my number one job should not be marketing. So I still love being a thought leader. I still love contributing my ideas, but the number one multiplier in our business is the product. So our marketing can only work to the extent that the product is awesome. Our support only works to the extent that our product is awesome. So the product is the main multiplier in my business. So the majority of my time now is spent on vision around the product, innovation around the product, making sure that continues to happen, and also scaling our marketing team. So just as a side note, we're hiring a VP of marketing. So if anyone wants to apply for that, we'd love that as well.
So tell me what a VP of marketing would bring to the table. What would be the things you're looking for? Because I imagine a lot of the people listening to this podcast would be in the same space.
Yeah. So I think a lot of businesses, at least that sell enterprise software, have scaled with a team of salespeople. So like the Fortune 100 company, Salesforce.com, half of that freaking company are salespeople. And that's largely how they've grown. And our approach is, as opposed to hiring salespeople, we're hiring media channels. So again, we hired someone only to do podcasts. We hired someone only to do webinars. We've hired someone to only do YouTube stuff and create videos for us. We're hiring people, like we hired a writer who's only going to be publishing a split test a day from our data set. So we're hiring media channels that can really do what they're doing. And that's sort of our emphasis. And so I think the main focus of a VP of marketing is coordinating all these people who are in fact media channels in their own right and creating a coordinated content vision to move the company forward. And then also they would be exploring paid media options as well, like Facebook ads and, AdWords and stuff like that.
I love watching the progression because it's, I guess in some ways I'm following in your footsteps to a small extent, where I've started rolling up some of my brands into the super brand. You know, Superfast Business is now the home of my community. It used to be Fast Web Formula. I've also moved across Buy with Bonus to Superfast Business. And I guess it's just a matter of time until I start having people move from the back shadows where they're editing podcasts and editing videos to having a front person or contributors who are helping with that marketing coordination. That's a long-term position, I guess, I could take with the brand. How much easier has it been for you since you went from the initial phases where you had a couple of different products? I remember you had like Welcome Gate is probably the first time I ever remember you, to then having Lead Player, which appears to be not for sale anymore, and then you went to Lead Pages. So how much easier is it when you find your thing, when you get to that one focal point compared to multi-product suite?
Yeah, I think that in a lot of ways, business is a jigsaw puzzle, and you kind of move parts around, and every once in a while, something just locks into place, and it makes absolute sense that it should be there. And when that locks into place, it makes it easier for everything else to also lock into place. And so, it can take a while to get that first thing to lock into place, but then slowly but surely, a whole bunch of other things in rapid succession also start falling into place. And so, yeah, we did some stuff with Welcome Gate. We had Lead Player. We're still supporting it, providing upgrades, providing bug fixes, absolutely supporting our customers there. But the main focus is Lead Pages. And so when that got locked down, we took the Marketing Show, which was our blog, and made that blog.leadpages.net. And then we started realizing that there were actually certain content pieces that we could scale. So we played with a whole bunch of different types of content. What we realized was that the best kind of content was videos about template releases, videos about new features, case studies around A/B split tests, showcases of landing page templates, and for the podcast, doing explorations of conversion case studies. So we're creating these really scalable systems where we can reliably deliver content by following a proven format for different kinds of content. And we're also following that around clarity we have around the product. We have absolute clarity about where we're going. We're not just sort of imagining that as we go along. There's a mission that we're trying to accomplish. And I would just say the more that things fall in place, the more they fall in place. And to your point about, following in my footsteps, I don't know. I've kind of seen this thing, and I have no way to explain this, but like there's James Dyson, right? Worked with you, then me, and we started working together. And then like I've seen Ezra like join your silver circle and take off. And I almost like wonder if you're like the, like a rite of passage or a lucky rabbit's foot, or like you need to like somehow bow down to James and like pay homage and then like something huge happens. So I don't know what's going on here, but I feel like you have a magic touch in a lot of ways. I don't know if you've done this on purpose, but in a lot of ways you've kind of like parented the next generation of internet marketers in this space. And it's really cool to watch that happen.
Oh, that's really kind. I guess in response to that, I'd say that my general management experience, where I used to hire people and teach them how to sell and then nurture them through their career, was a good practice ground for that. 20 years of that, and I got my skills there. But, you know, it also should be said, like, I've just asked you to do something extraordinary. There's 2,500 people downstairs at this Traffic and Conversion Summit, which Ryan and Perry put on. And I just asked if you could put aside a little time for a chat, and you've kindly done that. So there's all those people there, but you serve your brand and you serve the broader leveraged opportunity like a true visionary founder. So I think this is wonderful for our audience who get to find out this stuff. But it is a fascinating journey. It's kind of like we've documented it through our series of interviews from interview number one right through to when you came down to Sydney to our event. And then the subsequent stuff, like this is going to be a big year for you, 2014. And I'm very excited about where it's going to go. And I think you answered one of the biggest questions I get asked about my Own the Race course training is how to get ideas for your content. And it seems like you could never run out of doing frequently asked questions or tutorials or demonstrations if you have anything that could be demonstrated.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the great things about having a community or a platform or some sort of like active laboratory is that it produces fodder for content. So, for example, at any given time, there's several hundred split tests happening on lead pages. So if we can find a good one every day and publish that case study and then organize it by industry, somewhere down along the line, that's going to be a great archive of what works and what doesn't on an industry by industry basis. And as we add templates, that's a great thing to profile. We give those away. You know, Q&A, it's the same thing. People are always asking good questions. We're always releasing new features. And I think so many companies with their blog either go too general or they go too specific. So, you know, a company that produces cars might write some general article about car safety, and it really isn't relevant to most people reading the blog. Or they could go very, very specific and sell the living crap out of the safety features of their new car. And I think both of those are the wrong way to go. I think that there's this beautiful middle road where you talk briefly about what people should be thinking about and how to think about car safety. And then you also talk about how you've absolutely met those needs. And so you've, at the same time, provided content that people are going to absolutely learn from and benefit from, whether or not they purchase your car. You've given them some criteria. But then you've also, you know, for your customers and for the people who need help making a buying decision, you've helped them out there. And so I really think that's kind of the content sweet spot. At least it has been for us.
Yeah, I like the whole power of that sort of demonstrating products and features is, and you know, and you give away templates for people who don't want to buy the product, which is super smart. And then you show them how it can be done so much more easily with your software. The best thing is it talks to your existing customers as well as potential customers. So it really encapsulates this lifetime customer value, the CRM we hear about, customer relationship management. Now, of course, it wouldn't be a proper show with Clay unless you tell me some tricky data stuff. Now, recently you announced some information from your data set that was aggregated across, and it's not naming any specific customer, but what were some of the key insights that you've learned from having a couple of million opt-ins going through the system every month?
Yeah, you know, a whole bunch of stuff. I look at a whole lot of split tests. I think one of the most interesting and robust split test findings is that generally speaking, and I haven't seen an exception to this, I'm not saying it can't happen, but generally speaking, any kind of split test where a raw image is tested against a professionally shot image, the raw image wins. That's informed by multiple split tests. That's not like, hey, I saw this one dude do this the other day. This is like a number of split tests have confirmed this. Another really interesting finding with split tests is related to point of view on button text. And this is something that almost everyone gets wrong. So I was speaking yesterday at the internet marketing party, and I just asked everyone, like, which button do you think would work better? Download my report or download your report? And the one that always wins that is the one that is taking the point of view of the thoughts people are having in their own head. So people don't say, I want to download your report. They think, I want to download my report. And so you should write call to action text from the point of view of someone, of someone's thoughts as they're reading it. And that's, again, that's something that almost everyone gets wrong. We also looked at just aggregate the best time of day and the best day of the week to mail. And that was surprising. 80% of the weeks that we're, you know, where we've tracked opt-in data, the opt-in rate peaks on a Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. And they almost seem interchangeable. So I think a lot of people have some superstitious belief about, you know, it has to be Tuesday at 4 a.m. or something like that. And what we found is that the data actually showed it's a lot more forgiving, that Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday work really well. And then it drops off, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And every once in a while, you'll have like a Thursday win or a Sunday win or something like that. But 80% of the time, roughly, it's a Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. Also, we found that the opt-in rates peak between, let me see if I can get this right, between 4 a.m. and 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, so here in California. And again, not a lot of difference in conversion rate. Like, it basically, like, it's down and then it comes up and it just kind of flatlines from 4 a.m. to, did I say, yeah, 4 a.m. to 3 p.m. It just kind of flatlines. So if you get up and you're like, oh no, I didn't mail immediately in the morning, it's the end of the world, like whatever. Our data suggests like, yeah, you got around till around like noon or one or two, like maybe three, but just chill out, you know? So I think those were some of the more kind of interesting findings. We've also found with the release of our lead box product, we found that people are just absolutely crushing it by taking their on-page opt-in forms and replacing them with links to lead boxes, or I call them like they're either, I call them lead boxes, but they're also click-up boxes. They're opt-in boxes that appear when you click a link. So for example, we get about 70% of the people who opt in from a blog post where we're giving something away, if they are directed from the blog post to the landing page where they opt in. But if we have an opt-in box like right on that page, 90% of the people that see that opt-in box on average are going to opt in as opposed to 70%. Ian Brody had a really cool case study where he replaced the opt-in form on his homepage with a call to action. And immediately when you click on that call to action button, this pop-up box appears where you opt in. And he more than doubled his opt-in rate doing that. So that's a really robust finding. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of a good overview.
Yeah, I think I sort of indirectly got to that scenario, close to it, by replacing my inline form in the sidebar widget with a banner to my split tested landing page.
Yeah.
And I found that that had a much higher conversion. In fact, the test that I was talking about with Tim on the podcast about some of the test results were really fascinating. But I think we're going to be trying more of those in text links.
Yeah.
And you've got a new Facebook feature.
We recently launched lead links and this Facebook registration feature, and that allows on any form that you create, no matter how many form fields, you could have 50 form fields, but it turns it into a Facebook form where Facebook pre-populates all the data points that it has in that form. So if it's like first name, last name, email address, it'll pre-populate that with the data that Facebook has on you. So obviously anytime that, you know, you don't have to fill in a field yourself, it's going to convert better. Like more people are going to fill out the form because they don't have to do as much work. We also recently added lead links, which allows you to put a link in your email and send it out to your list, or an affiliate can do this on your behalf, where when someone clicks on the link, they can be added to a sublist, also added to a webinar, and maybe sent a digital download. And I think what's different about what we did with lead links than what other similar services do, like Infusionsoft, is this actually allows you to have your affiliate mail on your behalf. So you can give a link to your affiliates. And when your affiliates mail their list and someone clicks on that link in your affiliate's email, they're actually added to your webinar or your email list. So someone else is mailing on your behalf. And I call this the 100% conversion landing page, because 100% of the people that would have gone to a landing page to register for your event are opting in. And if they ended up on a landing page, it would probably be 70%. I also call this like the zero step opt-in process. We've talked about a one-step opt-in process where the opt-in box is on the page, and a two-step opt-in process where a modal window appears, or like a little pop-up appears after someone clicks on a link. But this is actually the zero-step opt-in process, because a landing page isn't even required to make it work.
So basically, the lead pages are disappearing for lead links. Is this a branding issue?
I think that as a company, our goal is to facilitate lead generation across the board. And whether or not that's a front-end intensive activity or a zero front-end activity where it's just a link in an email, we want to be there to assist people.
So you help people gather lists and build lists, and it works phenomenally well. As you know, I'm a huge fan of the product. And listeners can get access to lead pages. I highly recommend that you buy it. You can get a bonus if you buy through the link right near this the show notes on superfastbusiness.com. Clay, just to round out, I must say I love your T-shirt.
Yes. Greg made this. He did a fantastic job. He had a couple hundred printed up.
Wow. So our T-shirts are available for sale now, I think somewhere online. But they're up on one of his sites. Greg's just designed the logo for my next live event.
He's so talented.
He is talented. It's called Superfast Business Live. Details are on actually look for the colorful banner on Superfast Business. Clay Collins, I love watching your journey. You're an inspiring individual. Hopefully you'll be able to answer a couple of comments if we get some questions.
Absolutely.
I know the number one question will be, where do they apply for the job? Is there somewhere they can contact?
Yeah, you can, we have roughly 10 openings right now, which is just insane. But we have 10 openings right now, and they're all available at leadpagesjobs.com. And for our developer position, there's for any of the developer positions, there's a $5,000 finder's fee. And for all the other ones, there's a $2,000 finder's fee. So if you refer someone to us or they find out about it.
Yes, that's superfastbusiness.com.
/jobs.
I feel almost guilty. You're sending me so much money already. It's fine. Okay, so there you go. I'll hopefully we'll catch up soon and see what's new, but it sounds like that'll only be a week or so away. See you, buddy.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.